Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Every time a neighborhood bookstore closes, it elicits a sense of community loss, practically unparalleled to the closing of any other sort of establishment. There's something about a bookstore which seems to bind a neighborhood to those who use it and reflects its interests. This past month, the closing of Book Court on Court Street in Cobble Hill and the Barnes & Noble in the Bronx, we mentioned this earlier, in the Baychester Shopping Center up in the northeast there around Co-op City, have inspired two book lovers to fill the void and open their own bookstores. With us now, Bronx resident Noel Santos, creator of the blog Bossy and Bookish in the South Bronx, and novelist Emma Straub, most recently the author of Modern Lovers. She's opening a bookstore in Brooklyn. And joining them also is Sarah McNally, owner of the McNally Jackson Bookstore on Prince Street. Hello to all of you.
Hi.
Good morning.
And Emma, let me start with you. Can you describe why Book Court has been important both to you personally and to the neighborhood it served in Brooklyn?
Sure. So Book Court has been open for 35 years. And I think it's always been just sort of one of those third places that people talk about. You know, there's work, there's home, and then there's Book Court. and since I work primarily at home, it's really just home and Book Court.
and you're a novelist, not an entrepreneur by background, I think, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
How did you decide to open your own store?
So I worked as a bookseller at Book Court for several years, and my husband and I moved recently, and my only criteria really was that I was in walking distance of a bookstore. And so we moved by Book Court, and, you know, now they're going to close, and so we had no choice. We had no choice but to open a bookstore.
And so are you modeling your store after Book Court?
Well, there are a lot of really, really wonderful bookstores in Brooklyn and in New York City. Sarah has a gorgeous bookstore. There's Word in Greenpoint. There's Community Bookstore in Park Slope. There's Greenlight in Fort Greene. There are so many beautiful bookstores that we're going to pinch things from, I think, and everyone has been so supportive of us.
And Noel, unlike Brooklyn, where boutique and independent bookstores are relatively ample, the Bronx, after this Barnes & Noble closing, has zero general interest bookstores. How can that possibly be true, and how are residents reacting to the closing?
It's mind-blowing. I actually became aware that there was only one bookstore in the Bronx 2 years ago when I saw a petition to keep that Barnes & Noble to get their lease renewed another 2 years. So I didn't even realize. I just took it for granted. I didn't even understand the value of independent bookstores because I've just never had them. Barnes & Noble was all I knew. But once, you know, 2 years ago, I was outraged when I realized that there was only one. And the reaction is, it's really sad. Even though it's created a great opportunity for the Lit Bar and, you know, it has brought us a lot of awareness, it's really devastating to lose it.
Tell us more about your store.
Sure. So we're going to have a hybrid model. It's going to be a bookstore/wine bar in the South Bronx. And our tagline is a third place for readers and glass clinkers. So we're going to be a real community space.
There's that third place concept again. You both brought it up. Lib Bar. L-I-B-B-A-R or 1-B?
L-I-T.
Oh, Lit Bar.
Yes.
Lit Bar.
Lit like literature, lit like tipsy.
Right. Okay. And are you going to – do you think certain kinds of books are going to appeal to wine drinkers, or how are you going to market?
So we're going to do a general interest store, but we're going to specialize in local interests and the arts. We want to have an event happening at the store every day. We want to make it a real social place and do like happy hour, like happy hour events. And, you know, there's nothing better than, you know, than loosening up your tongues than a glass of wine and, you know, be able to talk about the stories you love.
And tell everybody where it's going to be.
It's going to be in the South Bronx, but we're looking for a location right now.
Oh, you're still looking for a location.
Mm-hmm.
Let me bring Sarah McNally, owner of the McNally Jackson Bookstore on Prince Street in Lower Manhattan into this. If I have my facts right, your store opened in 2004, right?
That's correct.
Just as mega booksellers, Barnes & Noble and Borders, were expanding, and online booksellers were rapidly gaining ground, too, already by then. So were you opening kind of into a different environment than we have today and for a particular purpose?
Yeah, I don't think I'm opened into what Emma is opening into. I didn't have any support. Everyone thought I was crazy. Actually, I was on this show the week I opened, and I remember about 4 years later, I saw the producer, and he said that he'd thought at the time that I was crazy. Huh. but it wasn't, in the end, crazy. And it's been interesting watching the chains retract so dramatically and the amount of public space that's been lost around America and in New York City. It's very dramatic in New York City, but it's also very dramatic everywhere, with Borders closing hundreds of stores, Barnes & Noble closing 40 a year. It's independent bookstores have always been different than the chains, and I wonder how we can fill the space that they made in cities, which was a little different than what independent stores offer. In Book Court lived a few blocks away from a very big Barnes & Noble in downtown Brooklyn, and those stores both offered beautiful public spaces that were very different and different people used in different ways. And I wonder now, as the chains are really retracting from urban spaces, that those of us who care about making third places for books, how can continue to serve whole communities with our smaller footprints.
Did you somehow at first kind of counter-program your store, if that's the right word, against the dominance of Barnes & Noble and Borders at the time?
I couldn't say that I did anything that deliberate. I've always said about independent bookselling that you're the kind of bookseller that you are. You have very little control over the bookstore you have in a strange way, because the only thing that you have guiding you are your instincts. So I've always built what I thought is simply the best store. In some ways, that's very different than what the chains are doing and what Amazon is doing. I spend a lot of time looking at other kinds of bookstores to see what I do differently than they do. And it's recently I went into the Strand and the Union Square Barnes & Noble, which are both hugely successful, very important institutions in America and in New York City. And I was looking at the counters, at the front tables, and 100% of the books were sort of greatest hits. Very few of them were brand new. They were all sort of within the last years, but they were all greatest hits. Some of them are really cool greatest hits, kind of books that indie bookstores sell very well, but it felt much more accessible. I walk into my store and I put so much emphasis on the new and the fresh, the stuff that when you walk in, probably 80% of the people who walk in only know 4 or 5 books on my front table and the rest is sort of discoverables. For example, I would not want to turn my bookstore into a greatest hit bookstore. I like it being a place where you can come and see exactly what is happening in literature right now, but I don't do that to counter program against what the chains are doing. It's just instinctually what I believe I want my bookstore to be.
Interesting. Noelle, what are you thinking as somebody who's about to open a bookstore as you hear Sarah McNally describe her experience?
Mm-hmm. So that's truly inspiring. So, you know, similar to, you know, to Sarah, I want you to come into the Lit Bar and feel like you've walked into a BuzzFeed article. We're gonna do non-traditional bookstores, book sections, and you know, make it a real place for discovery. So some of the ideas that we have is like creating listicles. 25 families crazier than yours. things like that. 50 books every African American, you know, needs to read. You know, and, you know, we want to attract unlikely readers and make the displays interactive. You know, that's the way I want my bookstore mm-hmm. to be, you know.
Sounds contemporary, right? To yeah. appeal to contemporary sensibilities. And listeners, anything you want to say or ask about independent bookstores in the 21st century, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Emma, are people telling you you're crazy to open a bookstore now, like I guess my old producer told Sarah McNally in 2005?
I don't know if this is good news or bad news, but no one's telling me I'm crazy. In the last week, I have had so many people come up to me on the sidewalk in my neighborhood and say, thank you for doing this, thank you. People are so heartbroken about Book Court going away that everyone's being very, very supportive of us. And yeah, no, I don't think I'm crazy, and not yet. I guess it's to be determined whether I'm crazy or not.
And Sarah, it may seem that the closing of bookstores in the Amazon and Amazon Prime era is a foregone conclusion, but I read that national statistics indicate that independent bookstores are actually on the rise. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, that's been happening. That's been happening for years, but that is happening in nationally in a market where the chains are leaving huge chunks of cities without any bookstore at all. And it's to look at the kind of numbers that, like for example, we've had a couple new independent bookstores open on the Upper West Side. Book culture has expanded up there, but the borders at that place, Lincoln,
Columbus Circle
closed, and that's probably $10 million worth of book sales lost. And there's all of these, if you start looking at the markets in dollars. So I heard an interesting story about Len Reggio when he opened his Barnes & Noble at 86th Street and Broadway, and everyone was infuriated because there was a Shakespeare and Company up there. Mm-hmm. And he said, look, that store was doing $1 or $2 million a year. I'm doing $18 million a year. No one can tell me that neighborhood wasn't being underserved. And so there's now so many neighborhoods that are being underserved with bookstores, and independents are filling that gap a little bit. I don't think anywhere close to what they could be doing.
I would have guessed, without really knowing, that if there's a business model for something to remain, it would be the big chains because they have, you know, the advantages of volume and discounts and all of that. And the independent bookstores, which used to complain about being put out of business by the proliferation of the big chains like in the 80s, would have the hardest time competing with Amazon. Why is it not the case? Why is it that Barnes & Nobles are closing but independent bookstores are opening?
Well, I think maybe in this case the answer is the most obvious, which is that buying online is something of a generic experience. Buying a book online is not that different than buying a lawnmower online or whatever else. And walking into Barnes & Noble, which I like Barnes & Noble and I think they've been wonderful for the country generally, is not a highly individuated experience. It just feels like a big store without a lot of personality. So that market, I think, overlaps more than the independent bookstore
overlaps
market.
With Amazon. Yeah. Adali in the Pelham Parkway section of the Bronx. Hi, Adali. You're on WNYC.
Hi. The store that's about to open in the South Bronx reminds me of a bookstore in East Harlem called La Casa Azul. It was a wonderful bookstore, and the owner reached out to the community often. There are events every month, but it wasn't successful. It closed down.
Noelle, you familiar with that one?
Yes. A woman named Aurora was the owner of La Casa Azul. The bookstore was very successful. She just made a personal life choice and moved to the West Coast.
Oh, okay. I thought it wasn't working out.
No, it was a lovely store, and it was doing very well. It was just a just a personal decision. Aurora, she was actually the very first person that I reached out to when I decided that I was going to open a bookstore. I heard that she won this huge grant, the Mission Main Street grant. I believe it was from Chase, like $100,000, and that's what inspired me to move forward with this project.
Adali, thank you so much. Call us again. Tanya in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tanya.
Yes, I am just so grateful. This is a breath of fresh air to hear that this young lady is opening up a bookstore, because I am an avid reader, and all we have left is like finding a book club and a library, which is hard now. So I just wanted to get more information about when her store was opening, because I will sure be there, and hopefully you'll have it open up for a book club so we can meet somewhere and have this discussion.
Third space. Well, we have two people here who are opening bookstores. So, Noelle, you want to tell Tanya's in Brooklyn, but maybe she'll come to the Bronx anyway if you open up a cool lit bar.
So I started a book club called Readers and Shakers as a focus group, and I thought it would be like this 10-member thing, and it's ballooned to 250 members, and we have a 60% monthly participation rate, and people come from Brooklyn, from Westchester. They come from all over the place. It's called Readers and Shakers. You can find us on meetup.com. And through that experience, I learned the special needs of book clubs, and even
other social clubs that need to get together, and that's something I want to address in my business model. You know, we're a bunch of strangers who meet up to discuss very personal things sometimes, depending on the stories we read, and we need quiet places, you know, places where we can hear each other speak. We need a little privacy. We want to be billed separately. those are certain things that it's really hard to, hard to find a space that will accommodate you. And if you go into a Barnes & Noble and you ask for like a staff, recommended section, that's not something you'll find. So when your book club comes to the lit bar, you'll be able to, share appetizers as a group, have glasses of wine. And when you leave, you'll be able to pick up your book on, for the next month on the way out and, have a real social setting, make it a really, a girlfriend's, a really nice girlfriend's evening or morning.
You make it sound so personal and so great. And Emma, how about your store coming to Brooklyn since our caller is from Brooklyn?
Yes, absolutely. We plan to be as full service as humanly possible. So book clubs, writing workshops, certainly readings, that sort of thing. And it occurred to me this morning at about 3 a.m., that I'm also registered to marry people. And so I woke up in the middle and I said, I can marry people in my bookstore. So we're going to take care of everyone, whatever you need. You show up with a marriage license, I will marry you at my bookstore.
Oh, now you've got a clientele. Sarah, do Amazon prices determine either how much you'll sell books for, or do you have to like hedge against showrooming, the act of people browsing for books in the store than buying them on Amazon because they're cheaper?
We get discounts from publishers that are comparable often to some of the discounts that Amazon has, but actually Amazon is not discounting nearly as deeply as it once was, but they're showing their pricing differently, so it's not apparent to the consumer. But I think everyone knew this was going to happen eventually. They couldn't keep bleeding money as they were doing with that deep discounting.
And once you have a sort of monopoly, you don't have to.
Right. And that's exactly the case. But then a lot of the things, the thing that really are the bread and butter of bookselling are paperbacks, which are not hugely expensive. So to get 20% off a $15 paperback, if it's in front of you at the bookstore and you like it, there's a lot of customers that aren't so price sensitive for the few dollars. It's the hardcover category is more interesting. And we have been, this year, the whole industry is watching a change that hardcover fiction is the sales of that are collapsing everywhere, including on Amazon. So there is price sensitivity, and we're going to see where that's moving. But I can't, the margins are not big enough in bookselling for me to try and beat Amazon. But the point of purchase is so low that I think it works anyhow.
Lisa in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I have a comment and a question. And the comment is just for anyone who's not familiar with it, the film You've Got Mail, which is one of the many adaptations of The Shop Around the Corner, is all about what happens to a small community bookstore when a large book chain opens and makes the whole romance of it very bittersweet. And it's very realistic and all shot in authentic places on the Upper West Side. My question, which is also a bit of a comment, is what are the issues with having a liquor license and serving wine at a bookstore? I don't like patronizing the Bell House because just to go to an art event, they were demanding that people showed photo ID at the door because they support themselves by selling liquor, even if you're just there for a literary event. So if you're going to marry people and serve families, how are you going to handle having children coming into your bookstore if you have a liquor license?
We're talking about two different stores because Emma Straub, who can marry
people. Yeah, no booze, just weddings.
And Noelle, whose store will hopefully open in the South Bronx when she finds a location, is the one that's going to make a wine bar. So does that mean no kids, no kids section in the store, Noelle?
Oh, we absolutely will have a kids section in the lit bar, and it will be called Kitty Litter. And once I started researching, sections and deciding what I, how I wanted the store to be designed, I started looking for inspiration, and I came across Book Bar in Denver, and B- Book Bar is owned by Nicole Sullivan, and it's a bookstore and a wine bar, and it's a true family space. And it works. If you look to upstate New York, we have Spotty Dog Books and Ale, where they have their books, art supplies, and a beer garden. And it works. It's no different than, sitting at Olive Garden and having a glass of wine at a table with your child. And the beautiful thing about independent bookstores or bookstores in general is that, identities change from shelf to shelf. So, we can do happy hour for adults in the mornings. On Saturday mornings, we can be a children's space. We could be, it's all about your layout of the store. It's all about, your programming. And you just create
appropriate thing for the different areas, right? Did we lose you? Did we lose the well?
Hello?
Oh, did we lose your line?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Sorry. I thought you were losing your thought, but I think we lost your line. Yeah, you could open up an auxiliary one called Lit Juice Box.
No, I don't know. I don't think I want the kids to be getting lit. This is literature.
I meant literature. One more call. Mike in the South Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hi, Mike.
Oh, hi. Good morning, Brian. My question has to do with, I'm an artist who's working in the South Bronx in the Port Morris area.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually going to be at that bookstore if it opens by Noel, and happy to be there. But, of course, there is this incredible process of gentrification going on in the South Bronx with the arts community that changes to sometimes high rent for the population that's here. So how would Noel create a space where it's mindful that she needs to serve the whole community?
Not just the gentrifiers. Have you thought about that, Noel?
Absolutely. So I had no idea what I was getting myself into when I started this. So it's absolutely true that we're having a shift. We're seeing a shift in the demographic in the South Bronx. They're trying to rebrand the neighborhood, the Piano District, and it's it's really concerning what's going on. So my hope is that, we can create that third space where the existing residents of the Bronx and the people who are migrating to the Bronx have a space to talk about these real issues and become real neighbors. The Lit Bar cannot cure the divide on its own, but we want to be a hub where new people can actually experience Bronx culture, and we want to preserve it any way we can.
And we will leave it there with Bronx resident Noel Santos, creator of the blog Bossy and Bookish in the South Bronx. Hopefully her Lit Bar will find a space and open in short order. Novelist Emma Straub, most recently the author of Modern Lovers, who's opening a store. Do you have an opening date, or is it there already?
Spring.
Spring. Okay. In what section of Brooklyn? Is it Cobble Hill?
Cobble Hill. Cobble Hill.
All right. Kinda Replacing Book Court. And Sarah McNally, owner of the ongoing McNally Jackson Bookstore on Prince Street. You want to say anything about what's hot among your buyers for this Christmas season?
What are we doing? So it's interesting. We actually did, for the first time this year, we put our top 75 sellers on the wall of the year, and it was kind of exciting. Our bestseller this year, again, is Elena Ferrante's first book from her Neapolitan novels. It's her second year ongoing, so that remains our best.
Wow, that's very unusual, isn't it, for the same book to be the number one in two consecutive years?
It's that good.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Much more to come. Stay with us.